From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of December, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. The folks at the Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana, will be here to look at the cash grain market. Drew Lerner will be along to talk to us about the agricultural weather forecast for the planet, especially South America, where they've been suffering through a dry, now growing season. And along the way, we'll hear about agricultural energy prospects in 2012 and beyond, including a bit with Mr. Broin, the CEO of Poet, on cellulosic ethanol and a unique view of wind energy and its prospects for saving farmland and the family farm. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contract in the March wheat at $6.51 and a quarter, up 6.5 cents. July at $6.82 and three quarters, up 6 and three quarters. March corn today at $6.42 and a half, 9 and a quarter higher. The May at $6.50 and a quarter, up 9 cents. And July $6.56, up 8 and three quarters. September futures 7 higher for the corn pit at $6.08 and a quarter, and December at $5.83 and a half, up 6 and a quarter. The soy complex made things mixed. It was lower on the day. January futures $11.98 and a quarter, at 1.5 cents lower. March futures $12.08, down 1.5 cents. The May at $12.17 and a half, 1.75 cents lower. July soybeans $12.27, down 1.5 cents. August at $12.23 and a quarter, 1 cent and a quarter lower. September at $12.13 and a half, down 0.5 cents. And November beans of next year down 1 cent. Bean meal futures finished up $2.40 at $3.10.10, and bean oil at $51.78, 6 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures February contract at $123.15, down a nickel. April at $126.85. up 30 cents. January feeders at 147.20, 5 cents lower. The March up 7.5 at 150.35. And the February lean hogs on the day, $85.55 per 100 pounds, finished 20 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby, crude oil down $1.82 a barrel at $99.52. Ethanol at $2.23 and a tenth. That's 0.8 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.07, down 4 2/10 cents. And heating oil at $2.89 and 0.8 cents, 1 cent lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,562.90 an ounce, down $31.30. And the Dow now at 12,161, just about 129 points lower. The dollar at 80.4, that's up 0.69. The CRB index at 305.49, down 2.78 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon and tonight. Partly cloudy, a low of 30 this evening, south-southwest winds at 8 to 11 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high near 48 degrees with a southwest wind between 11 and 16. They'll gust all the way to 26 Thursday night, a 30% chance of rain, mostly cloudy. A low of 36 degrees with a west-southwest wind at about 10. Friday, partly sunny skies, the high 47. West winds at 10 to 15. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 33. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 48. Saturday night for New Year's Eve, mostly cloudy, a low of 37 degrees. And on New Year's Day, Sunday, mostly sunny, a high near 45. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 26. Monday, sunny and 33. That's right, we drop to 33 degrees for the high on Monday. And Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 21. On Tuesday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 32 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get closer to the end of the half hour of the program. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast, actually, but take a look at the agricultural futures markets, is Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, looking forward to the new year, I bet.
You bet. And a lot of excitement at the Board of Trade today. And we did see, the corn continue to be one of the leaders in the marketplace. It was kind of interesting, at 10:30 we watched Jerry Golke on CNBC, and he gave a pretty good articulate survey of what the markets were doing and the outlook, and about 20 seconds later the market shot up across the floor. Maybe it was Jerry, and maybe it was some of the weather forecasters getting their noon updates and pushed the buy button for some of their customers. And as a result of that, we did see a pretty strong rally, at least into the noon hour, 1 o'clock time frame.
I know you have your finger on the pulse of what's been happening in the weather around the planet. What are your meteorologists telling you?
Well, there's a lot of guys riding fire trucks, and the earliest we see some real changes is probably January 6th, 7th, there was some isolated rains last night in a couple areas of Argentina and also Rio Grande do Sul. And it does focus on two things, that the Brazilian bean crop is probably going to get a little more water quicker and going to stay in pretty good growing mode. And that's one reason why I think the soybeans were lower. The Argentine bean crop is being watched, and as well as the Argentine corn crop. Our best guess is that there's probably some yield loss there, and not only next Thursday, Friday, there's a rainfall event, but then two or three days after that, there's another one, and I think there's a third one out there, but it's so far out that a lot of the meteorologists say, well, this model is been predicting too much rain, and this one's been predicting too much rain. But that's as close as we get, and unfortunately that is a few days out.
Did you see the numbers as they were updated from Michael Cordonnier dropping his estimates of both corn and soybeans for South America?
Well, the USDA has them down for 29 million tons Argentina, and I think some of the people are down as low as 24 or 25 million metric tons out of that particular growing area. And, he watches it very closely, and it's always interesting to keep tune with him. He did have some numbers, and I wrote them down, but he has reduced it down below the 29.
He has dropped those numbers. I don't have them in front of me either, but we will have him on Commodity Week, not this week because we don't do a Commodity Week on Friday this week, but the following week he'll be on, and so we'll get some fresh numbers with him and give some perspective. We may have a few rains or not at that point and get an idea of what he thinks the crops might look like at that time. When you talk to producers today, I've got a question for you, because we've had such warm weather, and this bit comes because I talked to my brother this morning. Have they been moving any grain out simply because it's not holding as well as they thought in the bin?
Well, we saw that a couple of weeks ago as far as the quality issue is concerned, but we are getting reports that there is steady movement to this. We did, I think, pay us over the 640 level on corn here, and I think we paid pretty close to, I don't think they paid the $12 for cash beans here. Awfully.
Paul. Oop, and Paul is gone. That's all right. Well, that's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That one happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Of course, if you'd like to hear Paul again, you can do that anytime you'd like at 217-333-3434. We update those numbers with voicemail at about 3:15 and 10:15 each and every day with either the opening or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis, of course, on Wednesday. That analysis includes Paul Cooley, or you can just visit our website at willag.org, willag.org, or on your mobile phone at m.willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, U.S. EPA yesterday finalized its 2012 RFS2 standards. That stands for Renewable Fuels Standards. It's a program that ensures refiners, importers, and others meet national targets in the fuel supply for the following year. EPA approved a 15.2 billion gallon total of renewables, including 8.7 million in cellulosic, $1 billion in biodiesel, $2 billion of advanced biofuels, and the rest in ethanol. National Biodiesel Board spokesman Ben Evans explains further.
So what the EPA had proposed in June was raising us to 1 billion gallons of biodiesel, biomass-based diesel for 2012, and 1.28 billion gallons for 2013. This year, the volume was at 800 million gallons. So we were looking at what we think are modest but significant increases that will continue to grow the industry.
According to Evans, NBB was hoping for a final standard for 2013, but that didn't happen.
The EPA hit 1 billion gallons for 2012, and they postponed finalizing that 1.28 billion number for 2013, which we would have preferred to see that come out today. Obviously, we think that represents growth that is good for the country. It's good for our industry, and it's good for the country in a number of ways. But they felt that they needed to review those numbers a little bit more, and we'll publish that a little bit later.
And what's meant by later?
They didn't put a specific timeline on it. They just said, sometime next year. And we are pressing them to do it as soon as possible because, you know, of course, our plants and our member companies are basing investments and they're planning around this in a large way. So we hope they'll put it out as soon as possible.
That's Ben Evans of the National Biodiesel Board. We'll stay with Energy of Sorts, this time looking at the Keystone XL pipeline. It's still possible. President Obama will be forced to make a decision on the pipeline. The directive for its construction came from Congress and was included in the payroll tax package the president signed last Friday. If the president rejects the pipeline, the directive says Mr. Obama will have to declare the project is not in the national interest. The 36-inch Keystone XL pipeline would carry oil sands crude from Alberta, Canada, and North Dakota to refineries on the Gulf Coast. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but switch to agricultural policy now. The commodity group infighting that surfaced during the drafting of a farm bill proposal for the now-defunct Supercommittee will make it more difficult to write the legislation in regular order. It's due this year. That, of course, according to the policy watcher Jim Wiesmeyer, who looks for many of the features of the draft bill to ultimately find their way in the law.
Billions are going to be cut initially. There'll be more later. Direct payments, you already know the regional impacts, but they're going to be eliminated. Conservation program consolidation. The maximum acres for CRP is currently 32 million acres. They will go down to 25 million acres over a period of years. Move to revenue assurance programs subsidized by the government in return for no direct payments. That's a step in the right direction for most commodities.
Wiesmeyer, Senior Vice President of Policy and Trade Issues at Informa Economics, says the most significant policy change in the draft farm bill was the recoupling of government payments to production.
Going from base acres to planted acres. Now, from a market, it makes sense, but it does raise some issues. You're upping the target price, and you're going to current plantings. Now, I don't think it's a question of if that will eventually bring WTO challenges.
Wiesmeyer predicts the budget cutters will go after crop insurance premium subsidies after they whack the commodity title. And finally today, a story from the United States Department of Agriculture, where it's been reported that Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack has said that USDA would like to see antibiotics used in the context of disease control and disease response, and that the agency is working with veterinarians and land-grant universities to ensure antibiotics are used more judiciously. USDA is now saying its policy on the use of antibiotics in livestock and poultry has not changed, despite comments to the contrary from the secretary. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Up next, ethanol interests are lobbying Washington to extend a $1.01 per gallon tax credit for cellulosic ethanol as the industry struggles to get off the ground. Well, EPA this week called for 8.65 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol to be produced in 2012. That's up from 6.6 this year, but far below the 500 million gallons envisioned by Congress just 2 years ago. Jeff Broin is the chairman and CEO of POET. That's the world's biggest producer of grain-based ethanol. He says holding on to the cellulosic tax credit is a must.
Although innovators like POET have made much progress over the past few years, and the potential of this industry is more than 80 billion gallons per year, no one is yet producing at commercial scale. Policy support for cellulosic ethanol has played a significant role in industry progress. If we're going to see it through to the finish and realize this great potential, policymakers must continue to support the development of the cellulosic ethanol industry.
The original target for cellulosic ethanol output in 2013 was 1 million gallons. EPA says now that amount of production is unlikely before 2018. POET hopes to open a 25 million gallon plant, a biorefinery, in 2013 that Broin predicts will be the first of many for the company in a relatively short time frame.
We hope to be replicating that, and we can replicate that very quickly by late 2014 or early 2015 to be replicating, building multiple facilities.
In addition to POET's initial cellulosic facility in Iowa, Anbigoa Bioenergy has started construction on a 23 million gallon plant in Kansas, and a handful of other renewable energy companies aim to break ground on comparable facilities within the next year. Renewable Fuels Association President and CEO Bob Dineen remains optimistic that significant quantities of cellulosic ethanol are just right around the corner.
You know, it's never been a question of will this technology work? Will we be able to produce ethanol from new feedstocks? It's always been a question of where's the financing going to come from? You're beginning to see investment dollars flow to that sector, and I do think you're going to see commercial production of cellulosic ethanol soon. Don't ask me to define soon.
Per the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2009, cellulosic ethanol is supposed to account for 16 billion of the 36 billion gallons of total renewable fuels produced in the United States by 2022. Oh, let's do one more agricultural energy story for the day. Perhaps you've heard the statistics that America is losing more than an acre of agricultural land development every minute of every day. Rich Vanderveen, president of Mackinac Power of Michigan, says the wind industry can actually play a positive role in protecting the nation's farms, calling it a way to keep family farms in the family for generations.
Without farms, there'll be no healthy food. Without new income to future farmers, there will be no farms. So wind power becomes a very important wealth-building second crop, if you will, at 450 feet.
Vanderveen says wind energy development creates financial, social, and ecological capital.
Cleaner air, cleaner water, ecological value. Community involvement, community engagement, community investment is the social side of it. And, of course, financially, we're trying to create more wealth from the wind.
Vanderveen says it's time to wean the nation off foreign and fossil fuels and make more power in America and redefine how America would like to leave the world for the next generation. He's a proponent of developing the wind resource in a way to address those needs.
I think most people would agree that renewable energy with no fossil fuel, with no foreign fuel, creating clean air, clean water, and investments in our community is the way to go. That is a solid investment in America. It's a solid investment in keeping our family farms. It's a solid investment in public health. It's a solid investment in future advanced manufacturing. It's a way to create a stronger America.
Rich Vanderveen says he's seen the benefits of wind energy development firsthand in Michigan, where one wind energy project, he says, has saved thousands of acres of farmland for future generations and created a manufacturing base that has helped the state weather its economic downturn.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. On the phone line with us, Scott Butcher from the Andersons Delphi facility. That's the climber's elevator there to take up on what's been happening in the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Much movement as we make our way towards the very end of the 2011 year?
Yeah, we've definitely seen movement pick up the last couple of days. Obviously, 40 or 50 cents in the corn market will do that. I think it just kind of seems like most guys have got a lot more interested about moving stuff as we've got back closer to 650.
And those are new sales, I take it?
Yeah, a lot of pricing going on, a lot of DP stuff being sold right now that had been moved in the fall, and also new sales as well.
You think anything fundamentally really has changed yet, given what's been happening in South America? And the dryness that they've been making their way through in their growing season.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I don't have a real good handle on it. I've heard reports and you hear various rumors, so it's hard to get a real good handle on exactly what's going on. But it does seem like, we kind of saw last year with our crop year, we had some really high temperatures and, lack of rain through much of the growing period, and still in a lot of areas had pretty good yields. So, I mean, I think we saw what can happen with, even adverse conditions, we still had pretty good crops. So, I'm not discounting what's going on down there right now, because I'm sure it is, pretty hard. But, there is an upside, too, I think.
And then what about beans in the area? Have you seen much movement there?
Yeah, we have. We've seen bean movement as well. I wouldn't say, as much as corn. I think beans have been a little bit slower to move out of the bin, but, definitely seeing some movement there as well.
Yeah, there have been some thoughts that over the next several days, as we get to 50 or so, that producers probably ought to get out and check their corn bins at a minimum, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely a good thing to get out there and make sure that things are still okay.
Anything else we ought to talk about before I let you go for the day?
Not that I know of, Todd.
And then your bids, please.
Right now, this evening for corn, 6.55, beans, 11.82.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Scott Butcher is with the Andersons facility there in Delphi, Indiana. It's called the Climbers Facility. Well, I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast for some of you with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. For the rest of you, we'll say so long for the afternoon. Remember, you can always hear Drew if you want off our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's Eat Vegetarian Day. It's also National Chocolate Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1763, John Molson was born. He was the founder of Molson Brewery in Montreal, Canada. In 1814, John Bennett Laws was born, an English agronomist. He initiated the artificial fertilizer industry, and he was the founder of the world's first agricultural research station. In 1842, he patented a method to make superphosphate by treating phosphate rock with sulfuric acid. 1 year later, he partnered with Joseph Gilbert to establish an agricultural research station where they studied animal nutrition as well as the effects of inorganic and organic fertilizers on crop yields. In 1869, William Finley Semple patented the first chewing gum made of, quote, the combination of rubber with other articles. But he never commercially manufactured the gum. That honor went to Thomas Adams. And in 1886, Josephine Cochran patented the first commercially successful dishwashing machine. She marketed the machine to hotels and restaurants, and the machine was a huge hit at the 1893 Columbian Exposition. Her company eventually evolved into KitchenAid. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is with us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, we better turn our attention to South America. They have been dry. They look like they're going to continue to be that way, but I'll let you tell us how much rainfall or not they're going to get.
Well, it's very stressful and getting worse every day in parts of Argentina. There was a rain event that occurred about a week ago. And that brought some significant precipitation to a part of Santa Fe and Entre Rios and a few areas in northeastern parts of Buenos Aires. But we've already had enough dry weather since that time and warming temperatures now that a lot of that moisture is gone. And the crops that were benefiting for a little while there are already headed back into a crop-stressed environment. In the meantime, there was about half of the summer crop region that did not get involved with the rain last week. And those areas are seriously stressed today. And we're going to be seeing this continue for the next full week to 10 days. There is very little opportunity for rain of significance in any of these key summer grain and oilseed producing areas, and production potentials will continue to slide. Now, before I get too far down the road, I do want to make sure that we clarify one thing, and that is that the corn crop in Argentina is split into two crops. There's an early crop and a late crop, and it's the early crop that's reproducing right now. The late crop has not been completely planted, and the same is true for some soybeans, and these crops are probably going to be left on hold now for a while. I don't think there's going to be a lot of planting that takes place except for in irrigated fields. So that leaves the potential for at least some limitation as to how much damage is going to be done. These irrigated crops and those that have yet to be planted will likely have an opportunity to go in the ground if and when we get better rains coming up, maybe later in January. With that said, need to make one other comment, and that is that the longer-range outlook for all of January and even into February is for below-average precipitation to continue in Argentina with occasional bouts of hot weather.
Okay, come back to the United States for me. Where do we stand today as it's going through winter dormancy on rainfall in the Western Plains?
Well, right now, because all the crops are asleep, it's a pretty good situation. The moisture is there in the soil for them when they wake up, and early season crop development should get off to a fairly good start, certainly a better start than what these crops had to work with before dormancy. But we are still in the midst of a La Nina event, and it looks like it has become a little bit more traditional. That means that the precipitation from this point onward to the early days of spring will probably be below average, and we're probably going to be looking at temperatures that are a little bit warmer than usual. And so there's a chance we may lose some of this beneficial moisture before we get to the start of spring, and it's something we're going to have to watch very closely. But for right now, I would say that we're in better shape than we were a few weeks ago, and we are poised to do a little better, at least in the initial weeks of the growing season.
So can you tell me about the dry conditions that were persistent for some time in Kansas, parts of Missouri, South Dakota, and the western part of Iowa, maybe a bit of Minnesota? Has that waned as well as we went through the fall and into the early winter time?
No, it has not. It did actually get a little worse, and the moisture deficits in those areas will likely stay with us, especially in the upper Midwest. The eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, parts of northwestern Iowa, those areas are going to see a little bit of an improvement in precipitation potentials as we move forward now through this next week or so, actually next couple of weeks. But I don't think we're going to make up the deficits, and we're going to come into spring with a shortage of moisture. And that leads us into some bigger issues because the summer could end up being a little drier than normal.
Thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.